to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, and we also link to our guests' website. We'll give that to you shortly so that you can check out the information that they have to offer. We encourage you to do so. It's very important that you follow through in that regard to see what resonates with you, what works for you, if it's something that might actually benefit you to help you to move forward in your life and maybe people around you as well, then we encourage you to do that. If it doesn't, don't go there. I mean, we put out the table, we put out the spread, all the place settings are all set for you. All you have to do is go to the table and take what you want. You know, you don't have to eat everything. You don't have to take a part of everything. I know some people who do because they're just curious as all get out about just about everything and they want to learn as much as possible. Well, today is no exception in that regards in terms of sharing with you all kinds of great information. We're going to talk about the rules of how reality works and how they are changing. Now, that is an interesting concept because that's what we talk about here on this program. Looking for those new ways of living, new paradigms for a new world is basically what we're talking about. And today we're going to be talking about the leap of perception, the transforming power of your attention. And my guest is the author of not just this, but others. Penny Pierce, I want to welcome you to our program. It's great to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks, Richard. It's really fun to be here, too.
This is perception, as the phrase goes, is reality. And when I was early on in my career learning about presentation in terms of whether it was setting up a display for a radio broadcast on a remote, or having a client come into the studio to record their program or even do it live, or even someone coming in to record a commercial, or just someone coming in for a meeting. The way things looked made a big impact. You could say whatever you wanted, but boy, if the place looked like a garbage dump, you probably aren't going to be thought of too highly, and they're probably not going to come back. And so I was taught very early on that perception is reality. So if you put out a good spread, so to speak, you make the place shine. You shine. You dress well. You've got a nice press shirt or blouse or what have you, and you speak with intelligence and this type of thing, and not necessarily the big $1,000 words, but with some level of sophistication, yes, but I think you know where I'm going with this. More likely, you're going to have someone that you can have around for quite a while and develop a relationship with. And of course, that's not just true in business, but that's true in a lot of our various day-to-day relationships. But we're talking about more than that here, aren't we, in terms of the reality in which we live, which is being seems to be challenged every day, because just when we think we have a handle on what our reality is, something happens to turn it upside down.
I know. as your first part of your comment, I learned that early too. And being an art director and corporate art director and graphic designer and all that, or in my early life, I think that I've always noticed there's a correlation between the way your inner mind works and your outer environment. You know, when the outer environment is clean and easy to be in, you relax inside, you know, and if it's messy, you get confused inside and vice versa, you know. So it always was interesting to me, the connection between the inner and outer like that. And that fits into a lot of what we're going to be talking about, I think, because I early on started using my intuition a lot and developing my abilities with that and then teaching about it. And that caused me to understand that life was really accelerating. You know, I kept thinking everything's going faster, the trends are happening faster, and so I finally realized that what was happening was we were actually going through a process of personal transformation, which is not just changing things, but actually that you're talking about a paradigm shift. That's what it is. We're literally changing the way we understand ourselves and the way reality is going to function. It's like adding a new dimension to things, you know, like you had the line became the plane, and the plane you became the cube, and now we're in the cube, and we're going to add another dimension and get into something really different.
Yeah.
And I think that it's not just an ordinary change time. You know, it's much more than that.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the next step in using your analogy seems to me like the sphere or the ball, if you will, because now you're dealing with curves. It's not angles, straight angles and so forth.
Yes.
I remember talking with a gentleman many years ago on this program. He wrote a book called The Fifth Dimension. No, it was not about the 60s singing group. But he talked about how the first, second, and third dimensions, he can show you proof thereof. He can show you examples in our reality of what they are. Height, width, and depth, I believe, are the first three. He says, however, the fourth dimension, I can't really prove that it exists other than, for example, and he was talking about time. But he says the fifth dimension exists, and he began to describe to me what that was. Okay, and this kind of goes along with as we pass through these different phases, these transition points in human history, if you will, in our evolution. He says, and he went through the process of describing all of this. And we were walking back from lunch, and I stopped him on the sidewalk, and I turned to him. I says, you know, everything that you've just said about the fifth dimension, and I grew up in this industry working for 15 years for a Christian radio station. So I was pretty familiar with a lot of the terminology. And he was a physicist. Okay, this is not a faith-centered individual. He's very scientific-based. I says, the only word I can come up with to describe what you just described as far as the fifth dimension is God. He says yes, but he says, I can't prove that the fifth dimension exists because it's intangible. You can't touch it, just like the fourth dimension. You can't feel it. You can't taste it. You can't smell it.
Right. It's just experience.
Yeah.
Pure experience. Yeah.
And so we're now, honestly, we're in a place and time, if I may use that term loosely, where we are transitioning. And speaking of time, there's a certain aspect to our life and livelihood here in this country. It's called daylight saving time, which I wish they'd get rid of because it had its place in time way back when it was established. But then again, we have chickens. They have no clue as to what's going on when we move the clock forward or back. All they know is the sun rises and the sun sets. And that hasn't changed for millennia. So it seems to me that the next step in our evolution seems to be sort of letting go of that. I don't want to say concept of time, but being ruled by it, so to speak, being controlled by it, you know, in terms of, and for the most part in this global society, which is what we are, life is going on all the time. You know, they talk about New York as the city that never sleeps. Well, the planet never sleeps and people are constantly doing things at all hours of the day and being. And I want to get into, because you mentioned your intuition, you were using that a great deal. But when you talk about this leap of perception, going through these different phases, from your perspective, do you have any kind of description of, if I can use the term, our next phase of evolution?
Yeah, I've written about three books on it. But I think before we go into saying what it's going to be like, I think we have to understand what it is and how it's going to occur. Because I think what's happening is that there's such an acceleration on the planet that our bodies are accelerating the frequency. We're becoming aware that everything's made of energy. It's not just solid matter separated by empty space, that everything has a frequency to it, and that matter itself is energy. It's like E equals MC squared, you know. And so this causes us to have a whole different sense of understanding about how life works. Because then we understand that energy and consciousness are connected. And when you put your attention on something, you can accelerate the frequency of it. You can actually merge with things through your attention and understand them by becoming them. So everything speeds up. And I think we're at this point now, we're at the end of the information age, where we've, you know, got so much data and the internet and we're swimming in it that we can't process it the same way we've always known how to know things.
Some people are overwhelmed by it. I mean,
totally overwhelmed. Yeah. And so what's happening is that we're moving out of a linear perception where it's A, B, C, D, and you get E, or bit by bit by bit by bit, or byte by byte in computers, that it's too slow.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that we're heading toward now, which is that leap where we're going to shift into from the left brain, which is that functioning part of our consciousness that is linear. You know, it's compartmentalized. It has, here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact, put them all together and you get like a proof of something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're shifting into the right brain, into the body consciousness, and into the actual energy field, which is conscious. And that is all at once knowing. It is direct, experiential, immersed knowing without language. And in order to access all the data that we have to like dive into the pool, you know, and let ourselves become one with it. Then we bring that experience slowly back over into the left brain to make sense of it and be able to talk about it, you know.
And what you're describing, of course, I understood everything that you said. But there are people who are sort of running the show, not both locally and globally, who A, don't have a clue as to what you just said, couldn't make heads or tails of it, and absolutely want nothing to do with it because they like things the way they are.
The world is speeding up, and that kind of consciousness is going to be around as a resistance to change. But yet the world is going to continue to speed up, and more people will adapt to it, and they will become more the leading edge thinkers. It's a common reaction to when things get too fast for you, you retract and try to go into fight or flight modalities to protect your, you know, known way of being. And, you know, that is either fight. That means you control, you dominate, you try to, maintain all your belief systems. And we're seeing that in politics exaggerated, I think, today, where conservatives and fundamental thinkers are very much into maintaining the status quo. Whereas the other one, the flight modality, is not so much liberals, but some I would say they are. It's mm-hmm. like, let's give our authority away. Let's not think about anything. Let's leave our body. Let's all love everything and not be firmed up at all.
Right.
And there's a middle way, mm-hmm. you know, this where you are full of yourself, you're present, you're connected with the soul, you're getting clear information. And then you're also extremely compassionate at the same time and understanding the holism of things.
You know, it raises this concept that I have been talking with people about of late, having to do with the difference between our role in this world and our purpose. And some might say, well, no, it sounds like they should be the same thing. Well, they're not, at least not from what I've been able to glean. And I'd like for you to expound on this as well. And my observation, and I'm just going to use the terms that I've come up with. In my observation, our role in this life is as a student. We are educating ourselves. We are learning lessons. We are facing challenges, and it's not pass fail, and there's no grade. It's learning. That's all it is. You're just learning. You learn whatever you can And then you move forward to the next challenge and you learn and so forth. Our purpose, that's what you have to find out. Because each one of us has a different purpose. Penny, you have your purpose in this regard. I am just astounded as I look at your website, pennypierce.com, at all of the materials that you have available to people. I mean, if we had time, and I hope one of these days that we do, just to go through parts 1, 2, and 3 of Bits and Pieces, the three books in particular and the subject matter that you discuss there. But you also deal with dreams, and I love this. Dreams for Dummies. Very nice take on a series
that
of books.
That one has been redone because I got the rights back. It's now called Be the Dreamer, Not the Dream.
Ah.
It's about 24-hour consciousness.
Mm. Well, this is, to me, everything that we're talking about in terms of this whole aspect of perception. And I couldn't agree with you more in terms of finding that middle ground in terms of living in this world between the left and the right, the light and the dark, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's all, you know, finding some place somewhere when we're going to shift back and forth a little bit, but somewhere between the dualistic parts of this world that have frustrated me to no end, because I struggle with this whole concept of where we came from was the one, where we're going to is the one. There is no duality in this place. But here, we come here and there's duality. I'm going, could we just bypass? This is just ridiculous. If we know where we're going and we know where we've been, why don't we just go there and be done with this?
Mm-hmm.
But I know there's more. It's more. There's more to it than that. But
did you want me to talk about role and purpose or
yes? And my apologies. I should have stopped there. But yeah, please go on. Talk to us a little bit about role and purpose in this life for people.
I think that people's life purpose, people often confuse that with having a mission. And I'm not sure that very many people really have a mission. Some people may have a kind of calling. But I think that really the life purpose of everybody is to balance yourself out in terms of the various polarities we have, like masculine, feminine, or love, hate, or whatever it is. I mean, there's a million polarities. And to equalize yourself so that you have a open understanding. That is the real purpose. And I think within that, then we have certain filters of our consciousness and we're sort of built for certain things. You know, some people are really good at communication. Other people are really good at construction, other things, you know. So I think maybe the role has to do more with self-expression in my way of thinking about it.
Mm.
Is that if your role is coming out of who you really are, you're going to feel very happy and satisfied and motivated as you pursue the interests that are natural for you, as opposed to a job, you know, where you just make money or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that your way of expressing yourself wants to be authentic.
I know
that means you're in alignment with your own deeper self.
And a lot of people do get confused with the difference. You know, they think their life's purpose is the job that they're doing, that they despise, that they hate.
Right. Yeah. And when you're coming from your true interests and talents, you know, the talents develop, or they may be latent in there, but as you start using them, they develop and then they morph into other talents and you stay very interested throughout your whole life. But a lot of it, I think the life lessons are very much about the imbalances we have. Some people might call it karma, you know, where we've got something stuck and we didn't see the whole picture fully enough. And we need to see it more broad-mindedly.
Yeah, there's no question. And of course, that's part of what this program is all about, is to try to help people to get unstuck, to give them information and guide them to people such as yourself to find a way to move forward from where they are. And in spite of the fact that I have been on my search, as it were, since I was 17, now 56, and that has never changed. I continue, as all of us do. I have, and I've had so many incredible people such as yourself giving guidance and instruction and direction in the context of our conversations. I get stuck too. I mean, it's like, gee, you think I've got all of these resources at my disposal. Hey, I get stuck too. And sometimes we need a little help, a little hand up, if you will.
Well, I think the stuckness really is the thing that we're trying to clear. Sometimes I call it clearing our clutter, you know, that I don't really think the soul needs to evolve. It's probably just fine as it is. And we've forgotten about it because we have so much, you know, clutter and dust on the lens that mm-hmm. we can't really see or feel who we really are.
Yeah.
And so the stuckness to me is any time that we sort of touch back into fear of any sort, the energy contracts. You inhale and you forget to exhale. And then the flow stops.
Oh, yeah.
And the flow is really, you know, that I think of the flow as being the kind of collective consciousness of all souls, all maybe all sentient life, evolving.
Yeah.
Constantly, everybody helping each other evolve. And if you relax and fall into it, the next thing will come to you that is exactly what you need. You know, and there's a big trust level here with this that I think as you get more conscious, you start to realize that, hey, the universe is working by very beautiful principles and we can just relax and trust it and see what comes. And sometimes it's great opportunities and sometimes it's some kind of illness or something very challenging. But every single thing that comes to you in each moment, I think, is for evolution. It's
yeah.
to return us to the memory of who we really are.
Yeah. When we come back, I want to talk also about intuition as well when we get back from our break. We're talking with Penny Pierce, and she is the author of what we're talking about initially, A Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. She's also the author of Frequency, and I also mentioned a book series of bits and pieces, and who knows, we'll touch upon a lot of that, I'm sure, as we continue on. Penny Pierce is the website, pennypierce.com, PennePierce.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we want you to stay right where you are. We'll be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for staying with us as we continue our conversation with Penny Pierce. We're talking about a lot of different things here in regards to life, living, and the pursuit of evolution, if you will. We're talking also about a leap of perception, the transforming power of your attention. And we're going to talk more about that as well as intuition and some of the other things, a lot of the other things that you're into. By the way, this particular book is the winner of the 2014 Silver Nautilus Book Award for Science Cosmology. I think that's kind of cool, too. She's also the author of Frequency, as well as Bits and Pieces 1, 2, and 3. And we thank you for staying with us here on the program, Penny. PennyPierce.com, by the way, is the website, PennyPierce.com. And we encourage you to go there and check it out. We will be linked to your website as well so people can take a direct route through our portal, as I like to call it. We don't reinvent the wheel. We don't need to do that. You've already invented it. And so we send people to your website to gather the information. You know, this whole aspect of you know, we term it as new, you know, new paradigms for a new world. It's all the same kind of thing, and as I'm understanding it as well. But everybody's got to have a catchphrase. And it seems to me that slowly but surely there are a lot of people, but am I wrong in my observation or my my perception? It seems like there are more and more people, and you talked about this before we went to break. It seems to me that there are more and more people who are wanting to hang on to the old ways. Or is that a false perception because of social media and media in general, and because we have so much access these days that we didn't before?
I think that we're seeing it more, and that's probably was there all along. But because, like I said in the first part of the show, this acceleration that's been happening, and literally, I mean, you know, the Schumann resonance inside the Earth has been increasing. So it is, you know, a scientific thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that when the body's vibration increases, you know, we used to be able to kind of deny and suppress all the old fears and subconscious blocks. There was kind of like a place where you could put it all and ignore it. But now the whole vibration of the planet and every level is going up. So that fear level can't be stored where it once was stored, and it's popping up to the surface. So what happens then, you see, is in individual lives, we're starting to have you know, the fears resurface into our daily life. And events occur that remind us of previous things. That we then go, I thought I got rid of that. No, here it is again. Now I have to deal with it, but I don't want to deal with it, so I'm going to push it back down again.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we push it back down, it gathers more momentum because the energy is still pushing up. So then, you know, we can try, you know, the fight or flight techniques, you know, to avoid it. But eventually it's going to come up with more explosive energy and more drama, you know. And the same thing's happening in society. It's individual fear and collective fear that is now surfacing. And in collective fear, it comes out in current events. You know, it's in the news.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everywhere now. It's like we're swimming in a sea of this, you know, undenied fear and all of that. And, of course, that's what our election this year in 2016 was all about, is that everybody underestimated the amount of fear that was really rampant and people's response to that. You know, just really want something to change it all for them. Let's not do the work ourselves. Let's have somebody else fix it for us. And so, but that's to me a positive sign, because I really feel that fear cannot be cleared until it can be seen, you know? And so to me, this is the surfacing and the clearing part of the process of transformation. And, you know, it can't just, you know, I think that it has to play itself out. In a way, we have to see that the world is evolving faster than this fear modality, that it's going to be too slow, too sticky, too inefficient to think this way for very much longer. And it's going to, you know, it's either going to shoot itself in the foot, you know, or just be eclipsed by something that's better and more efficient. And I think we're already starting to see a lot of that, you know, with virtual businesses and new kind of management structures in business. It's not hierarchical in a lot of new businesses. It's more, it's a flatter structure where everyone's more equal. There's greater transparency coming. You know, there are many trends that are surfacing now as well, like the light through the cracks, the, you know, and that is going to grow. I am absolutely sure of it.
Well, know? I know that, there was in the last election cycle following it, and this was actually not only spoken about, but it was actually palpable. You could feel it in the air no matter where you were, this fear. And you know, you could label whatever it was you wanted to, the fear, okay? But you could feel it, and it didn't make any difference what you were afraid of post-election. I would probably put a very large label on it, and it's in a generic context. The fear was of change. Now, I was telling people that afterwards that it's not about the people or the propositions that passed or the people who were elected. It's about the fact that the people wanted change. The problem was they didn't specify what kind of change, and they got change, and it was so uncertain that they became fearful. And I think there's still some of that even today where, you know, people are very uncertain. And that's just one arena. And you take a look at business, you take a look at education, even take a look at religion. It's the same kind of thing.
They're all the old structures that are, you know, linear, and hierarchy is linear, right? Where the new spherical model of structures is this kind of more, you know, interconnecting balls of people who mutually include each other. You know, they're equal, much more equal. And leadership comes out of, you know, collective wisdom a lot more. So it's going to change that way. But I think the fear, a lot of that is right now, they want change, but they're afraid of losing their security.
Yeah, that's,
you know, that
very good.
The loss of the sense of self, the loss of what's familiar that they don't want, you know. And so I think conservatives wanted there to be a breakthrough in, you know, and let's admit it, you know, politics is really, you know, what, you know, blocked. It's like the oppositional forces are keeping anything good from happening in the world. And so are most big organizational structures at this point. I think a lot of what I see, at least in my work, is that there are a number of corporate heads and people who are influencers who are waking up. And they are trying to bring new thinking into their organization. So there is some top-down transformation going on. But a lot of it is also grassroots, where individuals are getting clear, and then they're connecting with their friends, and then those small groups are getting clear, and then they're connecting with other groups. And the groups are starting to do kind of a convening of exchanging and sharing their lists of people. And so they're getting more interconnected, you see. And this interconnection is going to be a really big thing now to help the new consciousness grow. Yeah. And it's so international at this point as well because of the internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that can happen very fast.
I think
especially
that,
with the young people coming in these days who are already partly there. They don't have to look at all.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are certainly, they're concerned, obviously, about the uncertainty, the things that they had secured, feeling secure in, they think are gone, which I find fascinating, especially when I take a look back to 2008, when they say this, and I say, I will say this, I will use this term over and over again, because, yes, I saw some expressions of it loosely in my world. The alleged recession of 2008, and it depends upon whether or not you accept the reality that all of this happened in the way that it was. But what struck me was the fact that they were going to use the same solutions they've used over the decades for something they actually described as, we've never been here before. And I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, we've never been here before, but you're going to use the same solutions we've used before for something that was sort of similar. And it's like, I don't understand. How can you use old ways of doing things for something we've never faced before, whether it's in economics or in any other realm of our world? And maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm always wanting to think and process outside the box, outside the nine dots.
Well, that's the old Einstein quote, isn't it? That the problems can't be solved with the same consciousness that created it.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. Hello.
Right.
Yeah. And yet we seem to do the same things again and again. And I guess that's why it's up to us, you and I and the other folks like-minded in respect to, this isn't about trying to convince anybody of anything here, on whatever level you want to put it. This is just about putting that information out there.
Well, it's about also just helping people understand the process of what's happening and the symptoms of it. And, you know, part of what I've done in Leap of Perception is outline a bunch of new attention skills, I call them, you know, new ways of thinking that we're going to learn that have to do with this intuition age that's coming in. You know, we're moving into the right brain, and we're going to work a lot with things like intuition and telepathy and, you know, I call it direct knowing and, you know, energy information, you know, where you're picking things up before their data, you know, pre-verbal information, you know, and so part of that is the collective consciousness stuff that's coming in. We're going to work so much more with groups and the group mind, you know, and we're already seeing a lot of these things happening, but they're going to be taken into art forms, you know, and become much more normal.
Yeah. I'm excited about that prospect. I really am. When we're able to, I'm sure that you have a community where you live, as we did when we lived in Phoenix in particular. Haven't really found that kind of community here so much in Santa Barbara, in spite of, you know, the general mindset, if you will, of California at large.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that you surround yourself with who tend to support the same, I'm going to say the same kind of thinking. You may not all think exactly the same. You may not all want exactly the same thing. But what you do know is that you do all want to move forward and evolve. I often think about some of these television series and movies and so forth that depict the evolution of man in a positive light, where all of a sudden the next strain, if you will, or the next evolutionary process is that of a golden being of light that floats in the air, you know, kind of thing. And obviously they need some visual representation, because quite honestly, the reality is that we don't know what it would look like through the eyes of a human being. Or even if it has any kind of...
But, you know, I've been seeing so many of the new shows, and I always watch to see, you know, how Hollywood is depicting things, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I think mass media is such a powerful thing. But it's a lot of very dark stuff coming out now.
You know,
it's almost like they're picking up on the subconscious thing and all about killing and death, and yeah. and a lot of the television shows are even shot in kind of a sepia gray.
Yes, yes.
That's like really awful, you know. But I think people haven't quite had a vision yet of how things are going to work in a really positive way.
Yeah.
I remember that film Minority Report, you yeah. know, with mm-hmm. Tom Cruise, where they had all the empaths laying in the pool of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that I have seen in my own visions of that's a group mind working to access information, but it doesn't have to be so, you know, dramatic.
We can do that now.
Sure.
I mean, we actually can. Again, many people that I've talked with on this program, we talk in particular about, for example, the Akashic Records. It's, again, mm-hmm. because it's not in this, it's in the spiritual realm, if you will, I say, this massive collection of information that we have access to all the time. And it is possible. You don't have to wait until you die and go into spirit, if you
no.
will.
Well, and I think that it actually, you know, it interacts with us. You know, when we need the next level of thought, it downloads. You know, we don't have to like go searching for it. Because,
interesting.
You know, what's happening today is that partly again, because the acceleration on the planet is raising the vibration of the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
We are coming closer and closer to the vibration of the non-physical world. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about all these dimensions, and I'm not sure how they work. I try to stay away from the term. Mainly, I just talk about the physical and the non-physical.
Mm-hmm.
And in the non-physical realms, there are many frequencies of consciousness. Like in your dream world, you go into all kinds of realms, and they all have different frequencies. They're all different realities. You know, so we have, you know, sometimes right after death, there are certain states that are very close to the way the physical world works, and you get further and further out or higher in frequency, and things work faster, and there's not so much sense of time at all. You know, I kind of think that we are accessing those dimensions now much more easily because we're close to them in our conscious mind. And you see the kind of books people have been buying for the last, you know, 15, 20 years, you know, life after death and, yeah. you know, all these things where we're starting to yearn for knowledge about how it works there, you
yeah.
know. So I think that the non-physical is, you know, I sometimes call this the inner blueprint, you know, that we have a kind of an inner pattern made up of our belief systems, our emotional contractions or openness. That then precipitates the physical world out of that, you know, so the inner yeah. blueprint creates the outer form.
Mm-hmm.
If you change the inner blueprint and clear your fear, the outer form will change immediately now because everything's in the present moment. It'll just adjust and your world will shift. And it's sometimes very fast.
Yeah.
You can go from, you know, being like a victim and having, you know, a sense of like nothing works in my world to suddenly having things work.
Yeah.
You know, amazing.
And to that, I know, not to be disrespectful of anybody who may feel victimized by the history of, say, their nationality. But I sometimes look around here in the 21st century at the various groups, ethnic groups that I'm not going to name specifically, who are still... Now, they personally didn't go through the traumas that their ancestors went through, but they're still carrying that baggage, if you will, and they want justice. They want satisfaction maybe even some cases they want revenge, maybe, for the injustices done to their ancestors. Now, I can appreciate where they're coming from, but it's like, when are we going to let that go?
Well, and, you know, it really is about a need for identity.
Okay.
And I think that as we increase in frequency and clear the fear, we find that we don't really need identity all that much,
yeah.
You know, because each, you know, it's a natural thing. It takes care of itself. You don't need to have recognition of who you are, just the freedom to express who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And that morphs. I mean, you know, I think that we are all evolving. And if you don't hold yourself to just one thing, you know, then you can be, you know, amazingly brilliant and genius, because then all kinds of things can come through you.
Yeah.
You know, like we have the idea that, you know, I'm the way that I am because of my ancestors and my lineage, or I'm the way that I am because of my past lives and all of that. But yes, that's there. But also I'm the way that I am because of the way the other people around me are. I have access to every single life that's ever been lived if I want to go into the imaginal realm and pick and choose things off the shelf and make myself into whatever I want.
Exactly.
And we're getting closer and closer to that kind of freedom of working with the imaginal realm to create realities for ourselves based on different frequencies.
Mm.
And it's what you place your attention on that comes into reality.
Well, but it also goes back to something else you spoke about in terms of flow. If you're hanging on to some of those elements of ancestral, ancestral baggage, if you're holding on to that, where do you have room for anything else?
Right. Yeah. That's what I was saying about, you know, blockages are contractions of consciousness and energy.
Yeah.
And they don't allow really the soul and the flow of all souls to source you.
Yeah.
You're blocking it, basically.
Yeah.
You're blocking the flow.
And again, I say this again. I don't mean any disrespect to anybody who has those feelings. You're entitled to them, you know. We have free will, you know, and you can feel any way you choose to for whatever reasons you choose to give forth. This is also very interesting, this aspect of intuition. And I kind of came to this an interesting way. And the best example that I saw in science fiction, that the way it was expressed, and maybe the creator wasn't intending for it to be an example thereof, of our interconnectedness. But there was one character in a TV series back in the 80s, early 90s that epitomized, as I observed it, the connection we have on a spiritual level or on a non-physical level. And believe it or not, it was the Borg, because each individual member of the Borg society had its own individual task, but they were all connected to a central voice, if you will. Well, aren't we in the same way? Independent, we go off and we do our own thing, but yet if we're willing to listen and follow the promptings of that higher voice, that inner voice to guide us, you know, you're doing your thing, Penny, I'm doing my thing, totally different, but it all works together for the whole.
Yes, I like your term, the central voice, because I've actually experienced that in dreams where I was with a large group of sort of intergalactic beings, and I would ask them a question in my own voice, but telepathically, and then they would all answer me with one voice, you know, at once, even though I was addressing a single being. And I thought, in the dream, I thought, that is so interesting. I was like watching that happen.
Wow.
And so I think that is true.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask. So, was it a male or a female voice? It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is when we listen.
Voice.
Well,
yeah.
I was in an intensive many years ago, and I remember they told us that we were to write down on this big sheet of paper with a big black marker, you know, an intention, a promise, something that we were going to do. And mine, which I still have the big sheet of paper that I wrote on, that I wrote and I said that I promise to listen to, and then in larger letters, and follow the promptings of, and I called it my friend, my inner voice.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought, well, what's the point of listening if you're not going to follow? If you're not going to follow, then why listen? You know? You know?
Right. I call that your inner perceiver. Like, you know, to me, there's a function of our mind. Some people might call it the Holy Spirit, even, you know, that that helps us notice what we notice throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know, we could go on a walk together and you'd notice a whole bunch of other things that I would notice. And we're making reality real for ourselves in our own unique ways.
Right.
So that inner perceiver function, I figured I should just trust it because it's going to get through to me what me, the soul, wants me, the personality, to know. And so I dialogue with it all day long. You know, it's like, why am I noticing this? Or why did I just think this? Or, why did this thing happen? What's going on here? And then I answer myself, it comes back in right away. This is, I think Buddhists call this, the path of inquiry, where you're, asking and answering back and forth. And it's a kind of mindfulness practice as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the inner voice. It's, the higher self, whatever you like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have that kind of master teacher inside of us.
Now, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. You have done something that I love the fact that you've done this. And in conversing with you here on this program, as well as before, I would say, man, I am so glad you did this. This is so cool because I also do this, but not quite in the same way that you do. You have at least two of your books recorded. They're audiobooks. And I am.
Three of them now.
I'm guessing audiobooks. You did the narration?
No, I didn't. I tried, but my voice isn't strong enough to do that for a whole book. I found my vocal cords got really tired. So the publisher had, actors and stuff do it.
I'm curious.
A professional company.
I want to ask a technical question that you would know. How long did they have you read? How long a period were you reading when you realized your vocal cords were struggling?
Oh, half an hour.
Okay.
Really short.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think it's fantastic because to be able to sit and listen to the words roll over your brain, so to speak, and for me, and I've been listening to audiobooks since I was a kid because I was receiving books through talking books and recordings for the blind, and read even my primer, Autobiography of a Yogi, that way, and still have a copy of it on my phone. And I listen to it pretty regularly. But the images, my mind is churning with the images as the words are being read. And if you get the right narrator, man, it's incredible. But the information that you have, for example, one of them is the intuitive way. The other, of course, the one we're talking about today is the leap of perception. And I just love the concept. I mean, it's not new. It's been around for a long, long time. Even when parents read stories to their children at bedtime, it's the same thing. And there's such a wonderful, it's such a wonderful experience. And when you're dealing with these types of subjects and this kind of information, you don't have to worry about getting stuck in terms of, maybe the weight of the book starts to get a little heavy. Even the Kindle can get heavy. I'm sorry. It's nice just to put the headphones on and drift off into that state and just really absorb the information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, there are so many people's intuition comes to them through all the senses, so I'm not a particular auditory learner, although I read people well through their voice. But when I hear one of those, it goes right out the other ear. I need tactile, visual and tactile.
Yeah.
So that's why books work really, real physical books for me are better.
Yeah.
Everybody's unique.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course I have at home, I think 4, 6 or 8 foot high bookcases filled with all of the books I've been gathering just in the last 10 years here in Santa Barbara doing this radio program. So, and it continues to grow, but I love the ability to be able to put them on my phone or my tablet, plug the headphones in and away I go. Back to the intuition. And I've raised this question with a lot of people because it was raised to me because I used to say that, if you listen to that still small voice, that inner voice, the higher self and so forth, it will never, ever, ever, ever harm you. It will never lead you into harm. It might challenge you. And to that, someone said, well, yeah, but how can you be sure the voice you're listening to is that divine higher self you're talking about, that intuition? Maybe it's one of these voices that tells you to go out and do mayhem and destruction.
I think it's a matter of practice, and you have to work with it over time, especially in the beginning you know, where they say test the spirits, but, you know, the guidance you get, you can start with innocuous things like what to eat, you know, and when to get up, and just start to trust those little things that are safe, you know. Or when you go to make a decision, I usually advise people to pay attention to their truth and anxiety signals, meaning the body will respond to something that's right for you and totally appropriate by opening up, bubbling up. The energy starts to move almost up the spine and out the arms, and people get chills when they hear the truth, you know, or you feel it, things click or clunk together and settle. And if it's not true, if it's even dangerous, there's an anxiety signal, usually in the pit of the stomach. It contracts. Some people have their chest contract or their throat contract. Or you feel like a wet blanket has been thrown over you, or you have feet of clay, you know, mm-hmm. that where the energy withdraws to the center of the body.
Mm.
So if you start to notice the tiny things, like, should I eat this or this? And your body says, oh, that feels heavy. You know, that feels better. Start to check the body signals that you're getting, and then use them to make bigger decisions.
Mm.
You know, or project yourself into a decision and say, okay, what would this be like if I did this? How does my body respond? Does it open? Does it close? Expand or contract? What if I project that ahead 6 months? How would this decision be in 6 months? And imagine you're in that movie of that situation and see how your body's functioning. You'll get an instantaneous answer from your reptile brain, really, through instinct. And so you can trust your senses that way for quick, you know, reads on your intuition. And then you build up trust with you. You say, well, that worked. Yeah, I should have left the house 10 minutes earlier because I had traffic on the way to my meeting.
Yeah.
And I thought I should have, but I didn't. I overrode it. You know, and that's one of my pet peeves is people say counterintuitive, meaning illogical. But really, it's to override your intuition.
Mm. And to that, my next question has to do with that, in that in your, and I'm using the word in your observation, as opposed to your opinion, in your observation over the years, what do you see as the greatest obstacle or hindrance to an individual's tapping into, listening to, and following that intuitive voice?
I think it's, you know, the fixations in the left brain. And this kind of goes back to the negative side of the intuitive, the little voice that you mentioned before. If you're very steeped in fear and stuck in a lot of belief systems, you may have your voice come from that place, you know, and it's a fear-based voice then that causes you to do fear-based actions and those kinds of things seem logical to you then. When you go from the clear voice of compassion, you know, of the soul, it never says should. It's not yes, but, you know, it doesn't argue. It's like a just right feeling, not righteous, right, but just right.
Yeah. That reminds me of something a friend of mine told me many years. I was probably in my early 20s and just learning, just experiencing and all of that. And I was sharing with her a story and sort of complaining about things not going the way, da 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 da. And she asked me this, well, what about this? And I said, well, that's fine. Yeah, but what da 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 da. And she told it, stop. Do you know what a yabbit is? I said, a yabbit? I said, no. She's it's an animal with long ears and a fuzzy tail. Basically, what she was telling me was, stop using terminology that detracts from that which you want. Don't play the victim. Because that's what I was doing at that time. Our vocabulary is huge in creating the world in which we live. And I know that comes from what's going on in our minds at the time as well. So listening to this intuitive voice can go a long way to maybe guide the mind to choose better words that will
create
a better world for ourselves.
Right. I think a lot of it, too, is learning to recognize when the left brain is talking and thinking and it wants to be the boss. You know, the left brain has gotten so, you know, it's the ego taken to a you know, too much left brain becomes ego.
Well, it does get a bigger paycheck after all.
You know, and it gets, you know, a lot of accolades in our society. But it has a very particular way of communicating, and often it's in negative declarative sentences. Mm. It does not want you to change and risk any security. You know, so it will shut down and go into negative thinking, and it will block you from trying new things. I mean, I constantly hear people say, well, I don't do public speaking, and I'm not like that, or I can't be like that. You know, it's common. You know, what's wrong? Nothing. You know, like people.
Really?
You know, it's like we have these very, very unconscious negative ways of creating our reality through what we say.
And very subtle.
So I say, you know, if you have a negative statement like, well, I don't dance, let's say. Well, maybe you should say, I do dance and I enjoy it and I learn things when I dance. And then try that statement on and see what it would feel like if that were your truth.
I don't know how to box step or foxtrot, but I can move. How about that?
Yeah, I like moving. You know,
I think that movement also is extremely important. And sometimes movement for movement's sake. Now, I love walking, and I've gone through a period of time here in Santa Barbara where I've had problems with my lower joints, my knees and my ankles and my feet. And it seems like I kept telling people as well as myself, this is a phase. OK, I've been through many phases throughout my life. They've all been a little different. And this may last a couple of months or a couple of years or maybe a little more, but it's a phase. And the reason that I didn't say that because I was trying to convince myself per se, I just believe that our bodies in particular and the world, it's always in flux and moving and changing and so forth. And I just took that concept and laid it over the top of myself saying, hey, what's happening here? This is not going to last. It's not going to be part of my material life until I'm 90 or 100, which that's my shooting. That's my benchmark right there. My goal is 100 years. And I think we need to start looking at our lives in that context of, and you know, because we're talking about words, and like you say, coming up with other phrases of a more affirming, because I hear so many people being so self-deprecating.
Well, another thing is that a lot of people have the idea that I'm going to put a shield around myself to protect myself from the negative forces.
Ah.
But what that does really is there's an unconscious underlying sort of inner geometry where you think there's an outside world that's separate from you, bigger than you, and negative. So you maintain the idea of separation by having that idea instead of thinking, wait, I'll just occupy myself fully and radiate my own light out into the world. I don't need a shield because I have a say-so over how I want to feel. No, nobody can make me not feel that way if I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are certain ways of thinking and phrasing things, I think, that are in alignment with universal laws and principles, and others that go against universal law and maintain ignorance and suffering probably as well.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. The combination of the two, ignorance brings suffering. And then, of course, there's a difference between ignorance and stupidity. Ignorance is you don't know. Stupidity is you know and you still choose to do the other thing that is not really beneficial for yourself.
Right.
This is to me most extraordinary, and I'm curious as to the folks that you come across as you in your travels, speaking engagements, workshops, and the like. Are most of the people you come across in your work just out and out receptive? Man, this is fabulous. Let's get started. I really want to transform my world. Or do you still run across every once in a while someone who's just utterly, you know, they came with their husband or their wife or their girlfriend, boyfriend or mother, father. I just have to be here, so I don't really care. And then they're on their phone texting or what have you. Totally disinterested.
Most of the time they are interested enough and already prepared, so they are open. Occasionally, I get people who are more conservative in their thinking, I think, and want more proof, or they just like to argue, kind of. Those kind of people can be disruptive. You know, I live in Florida now. I came out here from California to help my mom as she was aging, and it's a challenge in a way because it's so conservative, but the people are very warm-hearted.
Yeah.
So I can't talk about more sophisticated ideas, but they are wonderful people in general. So it's open-heartedness is a good thing.
Yeah.
I'd rather have that, you know, sometimes than people who are so into their intellectual life that they, they don't have the compassion.
Right. I know that working 15 years in a Christian station, I thought I was going to run into the same roadblocks and so forth. Of course, I went through my pro-Protestant and pro-Catholic phases until I shifted into more of the spiritual metaphysical phase. And what was so extraordinary to me was, of course, I thought, oh, all these people, they all believe the same stuff because they're all part of this whole crew. But as I began to just talk with them one-on-one in interviews just like this, I found, oh my, are you kidding? You believe that? But that's not in the list of things that you can believe, according to what you say you believe, you know, what your label is. And so it gave me hope that, oh my gosh, if this person who has this fundamental doctrine and theology that they're embracing right now and belief system, and yet they're talking about this subject over here. Wow. It gave me hope for the future, even back then in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think people's minds are broadening out, gradually. And of course, I think it's important then, as you start opening up, to find those like-minded others to, you know, saturate with the new kind of knowing and change the frequency of your own body, your own emotions, your own mind, and then the field of energy around you. And then when that saturates, your life really does start to shift, because at that point, it's not so much the law of attraction, which I don't care for that term again, because it makes it sound like there's an outside world that you're getting something from.
Right.
And you have to use willpower to do it. Instead, if you're in the sphere, then everything is in the sphere with you. Every option, every possibility, every kind of person. And they actually emerge out of the field of that spherical reality. So it's more like the law of emergence, you know, with whatever you comes into your life comes in at the same frequency you're maintaining. You know, so if you're complaining and feeling negative, then you'll get other people who don't meet your expectations and let you down and, you know, all that, because it reinforces. I mean, it can't come any other way, really, until you open your mind more.
Yeah. And I get so excited about the opportunities that come about. When we moved here to Santa Barbara 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, I made the commitment when we started this program that if an opportunity came along for me to have to travel down to Los Angeles or what have you, or somehow invite the guest to come in studio and then we do a little work afterwards or beforehand so I had the experiences and so forth. And again, this was usually something that was offered. I wanted to take the opportunity. I wanted to have that experience. Because not only from the standpoint of doing the interview and having a little more information, but also of that process of self-evolving, if you will, you know, and my belief is, and maybe it's more than a belief, it's the knowing that if I trust how I'm feeling about this person and what they have to offer, and it's a good sense, it's not going to hurt me. It's only going to help me. You know, I'm curious, though, are there things that we should be doing if, let's say, someone wants to take on that perspective and really just kind of absorb all of these different modalities and so forth, of ways of protecting oneself, if that's even necessary? Or is it strictly just, hey, follow your intuition, follow that gut feeling, and you'll be fine?
I don't think it's that self-protection is required. I think more it's that presence in the center of yourself, you know, getting centered, and then creating what I call your home frequency, which is like your soul in your body, your soul in your personality. And that feels you know, people recognize it in a different way. For me, it often starts with cheerfulness. There are certain states of being that allow the soul to come through very easily. Mm-hmm. Like sincerity is another state like that. But it's like when you're feeling good about yourself, like a little kid playing, or light in your eyes, or proud of yourself, or willing to laugh, or, you know, so many ways that we identify ourselves when we're feeling good. Mm-hmm. So learn to recognize that state of being. And sometimes I call that your preferred state.
Mm.
As opposed to when you're all contracted and angry and defensive and, you know, everything's a downer. You know, you can feel the difference right away if you toggle back and forth between those states.
Yeah.
So you learn to choose your home frequency state and get back to it as soon as possible, because we all get knocked out of it constantly throughout the day when things don't go our way, you know. And just get back to it and sit in it. And let it saturate with you until your mind is in that as well. And then allow thoughts to come out of that state. And you'll find that you have much clearer guidance, that you have creative and innovative ideas that are just right for you. You know, and or you'll find yourself being highly intuitive. Oh, I better call Nancy. Oh, she's, now you find out she's had some problem, you know. So it's that state of clarity, almost transparency, you know, where there's nothing in the way between the soul and those higher levels and your personality level.
When
you do that, you see, you don't need protection because you're not attracting the wrong kind of attention.
Right, right. Why do you care so much about all of this? And obviously you do, because if somebody goes to your website, pennypierce.com, they see a plethora of things, the books, the audios, the videos, on and on and on. So obviously you care. Why?
I want people, somebody to play with.
Okay, let's play.
You know, I think that's a big part of it, is that it hurts me when other people are hurting. Like when I feel people suffering and I sense that, you know, you really don't need to, if you can get beyond it, mm-hmm. and then maybe dissolve the suffering, that there are ways of improving people's experience of life and of themselves. And maybe that's just, you know, helping enlightenment come onto the planet, because it feels better. You know, it's more normal, it's more natural. And, you know, I think a lot of us have memory of those states.
Yeah.
And we want to bring those states into this world, shift this world.
During my childhood,
right.
I had those states.
Exactly. And we do have them every day. If you pay attention, you'll notice, oh, wait, I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Yeah. Go with it. Go with it. Before we wrap up, first of all, let me thank you so much for sharing so much time with us here on the program. It's been a delight to have you on the program, and I extend to you an invitation. Should you find yourself heading in this direction and in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, that would be fun. I'd love that.
Also, a reminder to our listeners, as many of our interviews are much longer than the actual radio broadcast, we encourage you go to richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and go to the link to the interview associated with Penny Pierce and listen to the entire interview. It's much longer than just the 50 minutes that you hear on the radio program. And again, the website is pennypierce.com. That again is PennyPierce.com. And I have three final questions for you, Penny, before you go. You've probably addressed and or answered these questions in a myriad of different ways throughout the interview, but I'm going to ask these questions directly for the program. First question is, who is Penny Pierce?
It's such a strange amalgamation of experiences. I have no idea on the outside what she is anymore. Everything that I've ever done is blended together. And I just think of it as a space of consciousness. You know, it is looking out through these eyes. But I don't, you know, I see a body when it looks back at me in the mirror, you know, but sometimes I think, how did I get here? Or how did I get this body? And why do I look this way this time around?
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
kind of what we said before. I would like to reach people who are influencers for other people so that we can get a lot of this helpful information out to more people in a faster way to really help people get out of suffering and pain and get into this new consciousness, which is going to be fantastic. I'm so happy that we're alive at this time, that we can actually do this.
Hmm. And finally, what is your life's purpose?
I think, like I said before, part of it is just balancing out, getting rid of any old leftover karma or things that I didn't quite understand well enough, and find balance and harmony in all of that. At the same time, offering whatever I know to help others. And like I said, it's not out of some sense of nobility. It's just out of a sense of it's more comfortable. It's allows me to have more people to play with, more friends, more family.
Well, I'm certainly open to all of that. Playtime is anytime you want it. So there you go. And I would much rather look at the things that we do from day to day as play rather than work. My father gave me some great advice when I was growing up. He says, be sure you get into a job that you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. And in my case, hopefully another 44 years and then some, because he said he got stuck. And so I've been very fortunate that however it happened, whether it was a lucky star or I just made the right choices at the right time or whatever it was, I've been very fortunate that I have been able to do what I've been doing and love most every single minute of it. And I've really enjoyed this hour with you, and thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
Website once again is pennypierce.com. Go to the website, richarddugan.com, radio shows page, listen to the full interview, and we thank you for listening to the program. Join us each week at the same time, and until next time, love Talal.